There we go. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, and distinguished lecturer emeritus at York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this July 8th edition of Vantage Point post 4th of July. Hope everybody had a wonderful, however you celebrated, commemorated holiday. And this is, of course, on 99.5 FM. WBAI on Pacifica Network here in New York, in collaboration with YC Radio. That's the YorkCollegeRadio.org. Well, today we have a major show, as always, and we hope people will be tuned in. We know people tune in from all across the country, and we appreciate that because they can do it on WBAI.org. I'm getting all my syllables all mixed up. First and foremost, we want to continue to encourage people to sign up to be WBAI buddies. That's a sustaining contributor, or what is often called a person who is a recurring contributor. You do that simply by signing up for at least as little as $10 a month. And after that, through your checking account or your savings account, and it's painless. So we hope that we'll get many people to do that. Give to WBAI.org. The other thing quickly I want to say was it was so good yesterday to go to the Commodore Park in Brooklyn to just bathe in blackness. Wasn't able to make it Saturday for the highly successful symposium put on by NACO. But I did get a chance to break away yesterday evening for just an hour to go out and it's just so many people. And I met lots of friends and people who listen to the show. And, of course, also just so many booths. And it's just so great to have this event. And we hope that it will continue for many, many, many more years. And people will volunteer to help it continue. Well, today we're going to be looking at two major subjects. In COBRA, the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America has just had completed its convention. I think it's its 30th convention, but we'll find out shortly. And we have two major guests coming on, the National Female Co-Chair, Masariki Jiwanza, as well as Cam Howard. And then the bottom of the hour, we have Reverend Mark Thompson coming on. Previously host of Make It Plain, Sirius XM. And we're going to find out what he's doing now, but also get the state of the race. That is the state of the presidential race to see how he is handicapping it at this stage of the development. Well, we want to go right to our first series of guests. Two will be on the line simultaneously. And we want to welcome to our WBAI listening audience, Cam Howard. Cam, are you there?
Professor, there's no Cam. I'm still
Cam
trying to
Howard,
pull up,
we're looking
but
at Cam.
The other guest is ready.
And also Sister Masariki Jiwanza.
Yes, I'm here, Brother Ron.
Professor, you can hear her?
Momentarily. I still think it sounds like we're having some technical difficulties, however. I'm hearing the feedback, and it sounds like we're breaking up, so hopefully that will be corrected. And we're trying to get, I understand Sister Masariki is ready. We're still calling Cam Howard to join us in COBRA, just completing a major convention. And we wanted to give some information about that. And we'll hopefully get it going shortly. And if we don't get it going shortly,
okay, it looks like we're experiencing some type of technical difficulties. We're going to try to remedy that as soon as possible. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Please stay tuned. Hey, Professor, can you hear the studio now, sir?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, and we have one of your two guests up. They're ready to go, and while I get the other guest up, why don't you talk to your first guest.
Okay, we'll get started with our first guest. Sister Mashariki, are you there?
I am here, Brother Ron. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm just upset that, you know, we're getting all these interruptions up in here, but we're going to make it work. We're going to make it work.
Well, we will. You know, technology is wonderful when it works.
I heard that. Well, we're waiting to connect with Cam Howard. Of course, your male national co-chair in COBRA. But let's begin with you. First and foremost, I was thinking about this the other day. I said, I've known you forever.
It's been a while.
Right. And I was trying to connect. I said, was it through the National Black Independent Political Party, the work that we did with the Campaign for a New Tomorrow and the National Independent Political Networks and all of that kind of stuff? That was, I just remember there's so many connections coming out of Indianapolis. So, first of all,
That's true. Plus, your mother was here.
Yeah, that's right. My mother still have family there, Ashley, a sister and who's there, and a brother, and aunt, and so forth. But let's just begin with a little bit. I mean, I've just always known you from Indianapolis, but do you hail from Indianapolis or from other parts?
No, I'm born and raised here. In fact, my family goes back to about 1862 right here in Indianapolis.
Oh, wow.
So been here a while, I have been, one of the few that have traveled around and made my way with the conscious community and always bring that information back to my community.
Yeah, well, I met somebody from Indianapolis. I was at the Power Networking Conference, and I was just referencing back in the day with Snooky Hendricks, and, of course, Bill Crawford was a dear friend. And Of course, Andre Carson is now in the Congress, but his mother, Julia Carson, of course, was a representative back in those days. So what brought you to NCOBRA?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day, Ron. Can you hear me?
We're still breaking up. Did you hear my question?
I did. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yes.
Okay. Yes, I was thinking about that the other day. I really first got brought into the reparations movement by Dorothy Benton Lewis. And this was back in 74, 75. She came to Indianapolis. We used to have an African symposium. I think maybe you used to come to that too. Dorothy came, and her theme was to hell with Baki.
I can't hear you at all. To our studio technician, we need to try an alternative method. It doesn't seem that this is really going to work, and we're going to be jammed. So we do have an alternative method, which is on our rundown sheet. So I think we should try that.
Okay, so we're going to try another way of communicating with the professor. In the meantime, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned. We will be back as soon as possible. And I think we have the issue resolved for this program. So I'll reintroduce the person, the professor, Ron Daniels, and this is Talkback Vantage Point, which is heard Mondays at 4 p.m. here on WBAI New York and WBAI.org online. So with that said, Professor, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hopefully this will work this time. All right, so we have Cam Howard and we have Mashariki Jawanza, and we were talking to Mashariki, the female co-chair of NCOBRA, and Cam Howard has joined us. And Sister Mashariki, you were talking about who brought you actually to NCOBRA, and I couldn't hear that on this end. So could you just repeat that, and then we're gonna roll, because now we only got about 15 minutes left.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes, I was saying I was brought in by Dorothy Benton Lewis, and NCOBRA had been formed then.
Oh, yes.
Dorothy was protesting the Bakke decision, and she had some T-shirts, to hell with Bakke, reparations now. And so I got curious. She was here for Indiana Black Expo African Symposium. Her and I formed a relationship. And then, of course, after that, NCOBRA was formed. And Brother Hannibal Afrique was like,
"Oh yeah,
what are you waiting on? What are you waiting on? You need to come on and join us." And I've been here ever since.
Right. Dorothy Benton Lewis, she was also very much involved with us in the National Black Independent Political Party, actually, too, coming out of Maryland, if I recall correctly, part of the Maryland delegation. Well, let's get right to Cam Howard. I won't go into his background. I was going to ask him about that, but in the interest of time, Cam, would you just give us some background on NCOBRA? I've learned not to take it for granted that when we have a program, even with a conscious audience, that people really have the kind of background. So Sister Mashariki was talking about when NCOBRA was formed, but just give us some brief background on NCOBRA, when it was formed, and why.
Yes, NCOBRA, thanks, Dr. Ron, for having me, and greetings, Queen Mother Mashariki.
Greetings, Brother Ken.
NCOBRA was formed in 1989 at the request of Queen Mother Dorothy Benton Lewis, who was with AMRO at that time, and she was calling for a reparations coalition, and Dr. Mario Badelli heard the call, and he brought people together. I think it was at a National Conference of Black Lawyers conference, and then and some other groups, the National Black Social Workers was there, and many prominent and inspiring lawyers, Chokwe Lumumba and Nkechi Taifa, some who were with the Republic of New Africa, they came together and they initially formed the Coalition of National Black, the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America, And since that time, our sole purpose has been to win the righteous demand of reparations for people of African descent. In the early part of our years, we were basically trying to make reparations a household word. It was not something that was the norm in this country. A few people had even heard of the term reparations. So we spent many years, the coalition spent many years educating the public on what reparations were, why they were needed, who were the culprits, and what was the various strategies for making the righteous demand.
Okay. All right. And Sister Mashariki just finished up the 30th convention, 1989 to 2019. And of course, 2019 is an auspicious year. In the sense that, well, auspicious is probably not a good word, but it is a significant year in that it marks the 400th anniversary of the arrival of the first indentured enslaved Africans on these shores. So could you give our audience some of the highlights of the 30th Annual Convention?
Well, I tell you, it was a wonderful event. Detroit was a wonderful host, we were there with our workshops, with our presenters. One of the highlights, of course, was our fundraising gala where Judge Mathis was the keynote speaker and supported reparations. We also gave Minister Louis Farrakhan an award. Imari Obadeli Queen Mother Moore Award, which he was very proud to receive. But the workshops and the interaction with people was phenomenal. The feedback that we got was that, you know, people are ready to work. And I think we now have made reparations a household word. And with all the other publicity that's out here, people came wanting to know what they could do. A few new chapters were formed, it was just a wonderful event. We really couldn't have asked more in terms of our community coming out and being supportive. You know, and then you have to understand this is a coalition, and so we encourage other organizations, of course, to be a part, those that have reparations platforms and those that can align with what we're doing so we all can work together. And that was one of the messages of Minister Farrakhan on Saturday night, how we need to unify. We need to organize our youth, and we as a people need to unify. And I think that rang in everyone's ears, and everybody was prepared to go home and do the work. Because, you know, a convention is just a couple of days. The real work begins once you leave there and get back to your community. So we really feel that people had enough information and enough momentum to go back to our communities. And, you know, we're looking forward to the coming up year.
Quickly, you said that there were some new chapters formed, and at the end I'll ask for some contact information. But right now, what does it take to form a chapter of NCOBRA? What are the criteria?
You need five people to come together, first it might be a local organizing committee until you get your bank account, until you get all of the specifics lined up. Five people can come together and decide that that's what they want to do in a city. Then we will send you the paperwork, and you can become a chapter. And, you know, we encourage our chapters, of course, to do the work of NCOBRA as it aligns with your community, because we cannot be removed from what are the issues of our community. We join protests, the whole educational issues that we have as a people. We're a part of that. I know here in Indianapolis, we go to school board meetings, we protest. And so we encourage our chapters to do the same, to really get involved in the community and bring the community in.
Okay. Brother Cam, one of the things, one of the issues, critical issues that has really broken into the forefront, and by the way, there's no question that NCOBRA has helped to make reparations a household word. That word, that has long been established, getting it a household word, and then the second challenge was persuading even us, that is to say even people of African descent, that it was plausible, doable, and whatever, and the polling is indicating that battle is also being won. One of the vehicles that is being utilized to both educate and mobilize people of African descent and others is H.R. 40. And I wish that you would sort of give us some background on the origin of H.R. 40, but also it has been sort of transformed, and sort of talk to us about how it came about, the original H.R. 40 and the H.R. 40 in its current form, and why the change.
Sure. In 1987, I believe it was, there was a brother in Detroit by the name of, we know him lovingly as Reparations Ray Jenkins. But Ray Jenkins approached his congressman at that time, was Congressman John Conyers, on introducing their reparations bill. And it took about a year or 2 years to formulate it, but eventually the bill that he asked to be introduced came to be known as H.R. 40, the Commission to Study Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act. And Congressman Conyers introduced that bill in every Congress since 1989, and he had patterned that bill after the Japanese study bill that was approved and that eventually won reparations for Japanese interned, who had been interned in internment camps in World War II, where their properties and things were stolen without due process. And so he patterned that bill after that, thinking that that was a quick victory for the Japanese, it would be a quick victory for us. But it turned out not to be so. And so, but he held strong and he continued to introduce that bill. But subsequently, after years had passed, a lot of study had been accomplish around reparations, around the injury, around slavery, around the continued injury for people African descent in this country. And that was one of the primary things that the original bill was supposed to do, was to study whether or not there was continued injury among current living Africans, people of African descent, African Americans, as a result of the periods of enslavement and Jim Crow segregation. So there were books written, there were studies written, there were proclamations and declarations passed. There were many cities and states filed legislation, slavery disclosure legislation, that also recognized that there was continued injury. Internationally, there was conferences held that recognized there was continued injury. So we felt that in COBRA, the National African American Reparations Commission, felt that that bill, as it was written, was obsolete in today's time. And so through the leadership of you, Professor Daniels, and the National African American Reparations Commission, and COBRA assisted in revising the bill, and Congressman Conyers approved that revision, and it's no longer just a study bill, but a remedy bill. It's designed to actually propose remedies and develop proposals for the actual repair of our communities. And that was one of the major things that we were able to put out into our convention this year, was that we wanted to really define what reparations were and speak to the issues that it was defined as full reparations in this new bill that we developed and that Congressman Conyers introduced and now Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee has introduced. So we wanted to just let our people know in the movement that reparations is defined more than just a check. It's defined as full repair, and we incorporated that into this new legislation. The second component of our thrust of our convention was to craft work around getting H.R. 40 passed, as well as this Senate companion bill, Senate Bill 1083. And we launched what we're calling NCOBRA Action 535. There are 535 federal legislators, 100 senators, and 435 congresspersons. And so we want to interact with them, with all of them, in what we call principal dialogue. And you know, Dr. Daniels, that principal dialogue is a statement, is a term that was developed by our brothers and sisters in the CARICOM community, the CARICOM's Reparations Commission. They engaged in principal dialogue with the nations of Europe that engaged in enslavement of African people and Native genocide there. And so we crafted what we're calling NCOBRA Action 535 to have principal dialogue, education primarily with all 535 federal legislators for the purpose of passing these two bills.
Right. Well, a couple of other things quickly, and that I wanted to address, because I happen to think that there's incredible work being done, and the incorporation of those aspects into the new bill is very much attributable to NCOBRA, and particularly your scholarship, Cam. I just want to say that publicly. I learned a lot from you and all of us did on the National African American Reparations Commission in that regard. I just want to address this issue when we start talking about what form and whatnot. There's a controversy that's erupted about identity and whether people who are from the Caribbean and other places other than quote-unquote, well, I shouldn't say quote-unquote, but paraphrasing the American descendants of slaves, so to speak, should get reparations. And this has become, I think that was, it didn't, it wasn't, it, it seemed to be one of the things that was also aimed at Senator Kamala Harris, though it did not come up around reparations per se. But would you? I would like for both of you to address this issue of the division of who should and who should not get reparations in the African community.
Well, you know, I'll speak first. It's unfortunate that this is coming up because so many of us African descendants, you know, we have the same issues. You know, when they went to Africa and stole us. And put us on those ships, you know, we all ended up at different places. And COBRA's clear, you know, we are about obtaining reparations for Black African descendants. That does not mean, because we have not talked about what forms it would take, they wouldn't benefit other people. We also support those movements in other countries and our people who are fighting for reparations in other countries. You know, we have an international commission, and so we're very in tune to that. We don't see any division with that. And so it's unfortunate that this, you know, has come up as an issue. We tried to move forward with what our mission is. You know, we support all black people.
Right. Cam?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, the issue is for us is that reparations has to take many forms. And even in the five components of full repair, cessation and guarantees of non-repetition, restitution, satisfaction, compensation, and rehabilitation, not every person of African descent is going to need to benefit from every form of the repair. And so when we look at the broad range of people of African descent in this country, whether they're, you know, whether they're descendants from someone who was enslaved, whether they came after enslavement, but during the Jim Crow period, and now they're descendants of Jim Crow genocide survivors, or whether they just recently came to America and they're first generation African Americans. All of us have been injured to some extent.
Right.
By the mechanisms of the American democracy or lack of democracy for people of African descent. And so the different forms of repair will impact all of us differently. Not everyone will need a check if there's a compensation. Certainly not the wealthy of us, of people of African descent, will need any type of compensation. But there's other type of repair that's necessary in the form of rehabilitation that all of us really should take part of. So we just think that when you narrow reparations down to compensation, that's really the only time when the aspect of who should get it comes into play.
Right.
Let's agree that the demand is just, and let's fight for that.
That's right. Absolutely. And that gets sidetracked.
Yes, sir.
Which I think this is largely a diversion, but I think we have to address it because for some people, they start thinking about it. I mean, really, my perspective is reparations is holistic. How do we repair the totality of the black community collectively? And if along the way there are individuals and so forth and so on, I mean, I'm not opposed to that necessarily, but my focus really is on the whole question of the collective benefit of the black community. How do people who are interested in forming chapters, contributing, or whatever, how do they get in touch with NCOBRA?
Sure, you can go online to NCOBRAonline.org, www.NCOBRAonline.org, or you can send an email to info@NCOBRAonline.org, and definitely we'll respond. There's ways that they can join actually online if they want to join online, if there's not a chapter already established and they want to take part in the work that we're doing, they can join as individuals, and we'll, you know, get back to them and let them know how they can get acclimated and incorporated into the work that we're doing.
And
we also
finally, encourage
organizations to join us as well.
Right. And finally, I also just wanted to say, and speaking of H.R. 40, the primer that was put together by HR by NCOBRA is just absolutely fantastic. It's an incredible piece of work. So using those same contact numbers, you can also download a copy of the I assume you can download it now on the from the NCOBRA website, right? Well, Cam Howard, national male co-chair for NCOBRA, and Mashariki Jawanza, female co-chair for NCOBRA, we thank you so much. We're sorry we got kind of disrupted a little bit, but we fought through the disruption, and we did some good work anyhow.
Thank you,
Doctor. And thank you for having us.
It's great. Appreciate it. Sure.
All right. For whatever. Reparations now. Okay, we're going to take a brief break here. We take a break here and come back, and we're going to be joined by Mark Thompson. You know, I don't know whether our other mechanism has been repaired yet, though I'm kind of listening to it and sounds like it may be. But nonetheless, we're going to stay on this one for right now. And we're going to take a break after some announcements and back with Vantage Point.
Do you want your favorite WBAI programming to continue to air without the Fun Drive Day preemption? Becoming a BAI buddy is a great way to prevent that and to help support the station. just by going to give to WBAI.org. You can donate today. So before you decide to buy that electronic accessory for your smartphone, here are some more fulfilling ways to use that money with some perks. You can use your WBAI membership card and receive discounts on Zipcar, 2 for the price of 1 admission at the Museum of the City of New York, 20% off sessions with life and career coach Nina Della Vecchia, and much more. You will also receive a WBAI tote bag, which you can use to carry around some on-air giveaways. For more information, go to give2, that's the number 2, WBAI.org.
This year, let's go green. To save money in trees, the local station board election will use electronic ballots. Members in need of a paper ballot can leave a voicemail for the election supervisor at 510-854-9663 with their name, address, and telephone number. We are missing emails for many members. Please help by visiting elections.pacifica.org and filling out a ballot request form, including the email to which you would like us to send you your ballot. E-ballots will be issued to all members with a valid email on file. Members missing emails will be sent their voter ID and password hidden beneath a scratch-off on a postcard. Ballots go out to all eligible members August 15th, 2019. You are listening to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York, New York, and online at WBAI.org.
We're back. This is Professor, and we're trying to connect with Mark Thompson. These days, I must profess, I am doing so many things and so busy that sometimes I thought I'd double-check the numbers several times, and maybe I still sent it off wrong. So I'm going to double-check the number for Mark Thompson and make sure that I have the right number, get that to our studio announcer. And because we are talking about state of the race, and by race, we mean the presidential race. And he is someone who spent a lot of time and does spend a lot of time dealing with that issue. And I wanted to have him come on and tell us what he's doing these days, and also share with us his perspective on the presidential race. So I am filibustering a little bit, trying to find his number to double-check it, because we want to hopefully get him on board. We also have the option to go into the phone, but I know he said he would be standing by, so I don't want to not have him on the show. So I think what I'm going to do is, if I could just take another 1 minute break, then I will shoot the number again to our studio announcer in hopes that we can clarify what is going on there. So if we could do that, we'll get better. Next week will be better. Then hopefully I can get the right number for Mark Thompson. Like, I have two of them, and so I will try both. All right, take a quick break and be right back.
Hello, New York. My name is Arthur Schwartz. You may know me as an activist attorney, or as a founder of the New York Progressive Action Network, or as counsel for Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, and Bernie Sanders. I'm proud to announce my latest foray into activism as the host of a program at WBAI. The show is called Advocating for Justice. It airs every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. Each week, we'll talk to activists who are successfully employing strategies which address the challenges we are facing in a post-Trump and post-Hillary world. Again, that's Advocating for Justice, Mondays at 5 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM. It will be movement-building time on the radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Barry, did you hear the news? Equal Time for Free Thought has a new early morning time on Tuesdays at 5 a.m.
I know. Now people can wake up to our unique approach to the big questions of life and the way a naturalistic worldview can help us become a more peaceful and just society.
And those who aren't early birds can still listen to our program later at WBAI.org.
Arnell, do you think it's some kind of miracle?
Yeah, not so much, but still. It's an excellent way for people to start their day. So tune in to Equal Time for Free Thought every Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. And remember to
tune in, pay it forward, and question everything.
Building Bridges, your community and labor report. From your workplace to your neighborhood, listen to the show that brings it all together. Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Bringing you news and analysis, local, national, and international. Monday nights, 7 p.m. We build bridges.
Come on, neighbors, let's get wise.
So, the plaster is falling, the paint is peeling, the plumbing is leaking, the heat and hot water keep cutting off, the elevator keeps breaking down, and the landlord won't return your calls, but the rent keeps going up and up and up.
Find out what you can do about it. Tune in to Housing Notebook, Mondays at 8 p.m.
Reactionary landlord.
We're back. I see we do have Mark Thompson now. I don't know what happened, but I admit to battle fatigue, and I have actually seen myself make mistakes on numbers, look at them, and think I have them right and don't have them right. So, you know, apparently that was the case in this instance. So now we're really pressed for time. Mark Thompson, Reverend Mark Thompson, welcome again to Vantage Point.
Hey, Ron, Dr. Daniels, a professor. Good to talk to you as always.
Well, we've been having some technical difficulties today, which we'll correct, and then I apparently maybe didn't send the right number or whatever, but you know how it is, brother. We've been in the trenches. I just want to quickly start off with what's happening with you, Reverend Mark. Many years on SiriusXM with the Make It Plain. You've now moved on, so what's next for Reverend Mark Thompson?
Well, we are about to relaunch Make It Plain as a podcast and a daily live show in just a matter of time. And so I'd ask people to stay tuned to social media because we'll be making a big announcement over the next few days.
All right. That's great. That's great. And of course, you know, you can count on our support.
Thank you.
In the interest of time, you know, I'm really interested in the presidential race, and I had really, and perhaps we can squeeze these in. I'm interested just from your perspective, however you're looking at it, how are you seeing the presidential feel in 2020 in terms of the sort of the characteristics or the criteria that you think are important for a presidential candidate on the Democratic side in 2020?
Well, I think the game has changed. I think a lot of the things that Reverend Jackson argued for, which you were involved in, and what you argued for, even in your own campaign, back then those things were seen as just so, so radical. But now it's generally accepted as the norm and the standard in this current presidential race. We talk about universal health care. We talk about free college tuition, ending student loan debt, doing something about poverty, and now even reparations. You know, all of those things weren't heard of over 30 years ago. Reverend Jackson ran, and what over almost really all been almost 30 years since you ran. So
right.
I think that's now, but it's now the norm, and that's what's on the table. Now, of course, some of the punditry says that's the mistake because in the general, that'll be a problem in beating Trump. But I disagree. If we're going to mobilize the Democratic Party base, and that base consisting of African Americans, women, the poor, seniors, organized labor, LGBTQIAs, brown folk, which really, to me, Professor Daniels, really sets the Democratic Party apart as one party full of smaller parties. Mm. So to the extent that we don't have a black, an exclusive black political party right now, the African-American electorate contained within the Democratic Party is its own sub-party. It is a black party. The majority of Latinos are in the Democratic Party, so that political caucus is contained within the Democratic Party. Now, that's a blessing and a curse, because the curse part of it is that we don't all tend to get along or agree on everything. And sometimes the perfect is the enemy of the good. But I think it's a good struggle. It's a struggle that is going on in the larger context of America anyway, and the Democratic Party tends to be the microcosm for that. That's not to say we may not need to reopen the conversation about having a black political party, or others might want to have other parties. But for the time being, that's where we are. We're probably going to need to remain unified in order to beat Donald Trump. But the right. statements the candidates are making that appeal to all of those smaller parties within the Democratic Party are absolutely necessary in 2019, whereas in 1984, 1988, 1992, you know, we were all still considered as being, you know, way far to the left.
Right. How would you handicap the field post the debate? There was a lot of discussion about, you know, the two debates, who won, who lost, and so forth and so on, and I don't know. But how would you sort of handicap maybe how would you see the first maybe, or not necessarily in rank order, but how do you see maybe the first five, six, seven candidates in terms of how you see the field shaping up?
Well, I think the clear front runners at this hour are Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris. The first night, obviously, Elizabeth Warren performed well. And the second night, Kamala Harris performed well. I think the Cory Booker, Mayor Pete, as well, are still in the running. And to some extent, Julian Castro. The problem with Mayor Pete and Julian Castro is that they're having trouble gaining traction, numbers, et cetera. Now, Mayor Pete is raising money, but they're overshadowed by the big names. Of course, Biden is going to remain a factor throughout this. There's no question about it. But, you know, when you're on the top, as he is perceived to be, then you're vulnerable. People take shots at you. And so that's the case, I think, there. I think Bernie, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, I think Bernie's a wild card. I think that there are people who are counting him out, expecting Elizabeth Warren to take away from some of his base. But Bernie's support was so strong in 2016, I would not discount him at all. I don't think we'll know where he'll stand or where others are really going to come down after those first big four, Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina. After that, we'll know what this field is really going to be. It's still very, very early. But as far as those debates were concerned, you know, if their points on landed punches, it was, I think, Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris. They set themselves apart.
Is it possible for two women to be at the top of the ticket and win?
Yes. I asked Kamala Harris that question when she was on Make It Plain, and if she'd appoint another woman, she said yes. And I think recently Elizabeth Warren said the same thing. I think it's possible. If women do what they're supposed to do, women have the numbers in this country, Professor Daniels, to deal with that. There's no question about it. Now, if women, however, feel, well, it's not their time themselves, or if women feel as if they can't sustain that, then yes, you have a problem. I mean, that'd be unfortunate. And again, I don't want to offend anybody by saying this, but if there are women who feel that the country's not ready for two women, that's just another example of the internalized oppression that many of us as historically oppressed individuals feel. Right. I was just on a conversation today, Dr. Daniels. You know, some folks still push. We talk about reparations, cash payments, cash payments, cash payments, cash payments. Like the only thing in the world. What we've talked about and what the majority of the reparations movement has talked about, though, is that that's not the only part of repair. There's mental repair. And internalized racism, internalized oppression right. is a part of that. And I think that applies to sexism in America. If women believe that it's their time, two women on a ticket can work.
Right. Yeah, and I say that because I had a friendly debate with a friend of mine about that. And I make the same argument, is that, you know, yes, I mean, we have chauvinism in society. There'll be some men who are turned off. There'll be others who will be supportive. But the numbers are there, because I continue to argue that, for better or worse, and it's really worse, but it's the reality, even in an election that is highly touted, a good 40 to 45% of the total American electorate does not vote. And so, therefore, if those who vote will win. And there are young people who, if they march on ballot boxes, the numbers are there. The women are there. I mean, it is, and that's what I think happened, you know, with Stacey Abrams in Georgia, as well as Gilliam to some degree in Florida, that's what we should be thinking about. Because I'm also disturbed by this whole question that's coming up, that black people are waiting to see whether white folks will vote for a black person before they vote for a black person. I mean, you know, that's that same...
We gotta
get some information out about that.
Well, and that's something that a cash payment won't solve. Okay,
right,
when we talk about reparations, you know, man, I told you we were sitting in the hearing. And congratulations on your collaboration with the Judiciary Committee and organizing the hearing. It was excellent. But I had a sister say to me, man, I can't wait to get my check so I can get me some red bottoms.
right.
And then she looked at me and realized who she said it to, and then was kind of sorry she said it. But the point is, you know, that's what we've got to get. We've got to get beyond, and it's more than a conversation. It is a process of self-esteem and believing. Yes, if we all voted, we'd be something. Even with the low numbers, African-Americans still will decide this election. Women still will decide this election. And then when you intersect women and African-Americans, boom, you've got something. I hear from black women, we're not ready for a black woman president. We can't play. We have to stop Trump. So we need a white man like Biden to run against another white man. I mean, that is the thing that we're dealing with. And that may be true. That may ultimately be true. But it's definitely true if we believe it and promote it.
That's right.
It may not
That's
be
right.
true if we open ourselves up to the possibility of a ticket with two women, or a woman and a Latino, or a Latino and a woman, or just what have you. And listen, let's put Buttigieg out there, too. In spite of some of the issues he's dealing with back home in South Bend with the police and everything, he is still a very popular person, candidate, who is very sensible to a lot of people, including women and people of color, and he's LGBTQIA. So look at the field. And, you know, we can't beat ourselves before we can get in it, Ron. We've got women in the forefront, a Latino, an African-American man, an African-American woman, a socialist. So if we buy into our own internalized oppression and pessimism, we've already lost. Because by most standards in the history of America, none of those individuals, yes, including Bernie, a white socialist, should even be running. But the fact of the matter is, that's just how it speaks to something. It says something that we're doing right. And when I say we, that's all of us who represent
collectively
the majority
right.
of Americans, progressives, people on the left.
Well, I got 30 seconds left. So people who are wanting to connect with Reverend Mark Thompson, how do they do that? New platforms are coming out and so forth. So tell people how they connect with Reverend Mark Thompson.
Folks, go to Twitter at Make It Plain. That's the best thing to do. Or Facebook Make It Plain. Twitter Make It Plain. Facebook Make It Plain. And you'll find me right there and keep you up to date on everything.
All right. Reverend Mark Thompson, new show rolling out, both on social media and podcast coming up. And we know it's going to be plain, because it's going to make it plain. And as always, made it plain. My dear friend, appreciate you so much. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, man.
Afternoon.
All right. Thank you. Take care now.
All right, that's going to be the wrap for the show this week. Hopefully we'll, you know, on our end, get these little glitches out. Again, I'm kind of listening simultaneously. I'm chewing bubble gum and listening, too. It seems to be coming through loud and clear now, but it wasn't earlier. So, but we worked it out because it's about Kuumba, creativity, and we know how to do that on WBAI. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels saying we'll see you again next week here on Vantage Point.
Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee. Smile is in the making. You gotta fight the powers that be. Got so many
WBAI New York.